Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. 150 years old. Our next guest says that could happen. Like a person born today could live to be 150 years old. Will it happen? Who would want that? And certainly, how would it affect your financial plan? These are all really, really important questions. Darren Coleman says the financial planning industry has it wrong when they consider the actuarial tables and how that relates to retirement savings. He is a senior portfolio manager at Coleman Wealth at Raymond James, and he joins us now from Oakville, Ontario, to talk about this question of longevity and whether it's 150 or 125, whether we have built sufficient buffer in our plans to account for that. Hello, Darren.
Hi, Bruce. Nice to see you.
Tell us more about this 150-year-old number. Where does it come from?
Yeah, so it's a big number. It tends to catch people by surprise, but it does come from some validated research. And if people want to look this article up, it's in the Harvard Gazette from January 2023. And it comes from Dr. David Sinclair, who's basically the head of biology and aging research at Harvard. And in the article, they talk about the fact that medical science has moved to the place where it's not unlikely that the first human to live to 150 years old has already been born. And that is an astonishing fact for most of us to begin to process, I think.
Yeah. Would you be up for 150? Because I'm good. Like, clock me out at 94. I am so done. Would you want to live to be 150?
Well, my family would argue that I'm still seven sometimes, the way I behave. So age is an interesting construct, right? My knees might need a bit of work, but yeah. We have to get that idea in our heads, though, that we're going to live longer than we thought. And one of the things we talk to clients a lot about is understanding that their retirement is not going to be like their grandmother's retirement.
Yeah. I have a financial plan. In my financial plan, we have me fertilizing the earth or being a urn of dust at, I think, age 95. You're saying that in the financial industry writ large, they are not so conservative in terms of how long we will live. What are some of the benchmarks that you see?
Well, when you look at actuarial tables that the insurance companies provide, or you look for quotations as we would for, you know, life insurance or annuity products, the built-in assumption is that the average couple or the average person is going to live till somewhere in their late 80s. And that's an interesting number. If I go back to when I began my career in the early 90s, when people were 80 years old, they were old. Like, they had the shoes with the Velcro. They were old.
Yes.
You know, that great generation, right? And they'd seen a lot, lived a lot, and they were, that's terrible. Like, think about Golden Girls, right? That was the image. By the way, the actresses in Golden Girls were in their 50s.
Yeah.
Think about that, right? So, but now, today, if you go to pharmacy that has a section for birthday cards, there's not one, but probably several choices for happy 100th birthday. Mm. So these things didn't exist when you were a kid, when I was a kid. When you were in your teens, if someone turned age 100, two things happened. They got a letter from the Queen, and the news channel showed up to show them blowing out either the one candle or the 100 candles if they had a smart-ass son-in-law. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was unusual. It was rare, and we thought that was, wow, 100 years old. That's incredible. Today, completely common. And so that number is going to keep getting moved out. And I don't think our industry prepares us for that. We have this construct of what retirement's going to look like. And there's these built-in assumptions. And one of them is you're going to be gone by the time you're 90. And I would argue with the research we're seeing today, we're going to have to rethink that.
Yeah. What number do you assume? If you're writing a financial plan for a client, what number would you assume?
It's amazing how many people I have to talk into the idea that 100 is probably normal. They don't even see it coming. So I don't want to get into an arm wrestling match with people, but 100, and what's also interesting is some software doesn't allow us to plan for longer than that. That's also an interesting thing that, again, I see some of these assumptions built into software and compliance things that I think we're going to have to massage them and find a way to nudge them out a bit more.
I am currently reading Outlive, which is a longevity book topping the New York Times bestseller charts. And it talks about slow death versus fast death. And with a slow death, sure, we're going to live longer, maybe not to 150. We're going to live longer, but it may not be at our super healthy, vibrant quality of life. When you get into more medical complications and more support required, the dollars involved are an order of magnitude higher than that image of the retiree, you know, sitting around their house and spending the weekend gardening. How do you factor that, what is it? Go, slow go, no go, a longer period of time in the no-go phase.
Well, and that's an interesting thing that we talk to clients about is that retirement, when they project it in their minds or in the software, it tends to look like a straight line, but it isn't. So for most people, they think, well, retirement will probably be front-ended with travel. Like as long as my knees work and my hips work, I want to do as much of that mobile stuff as I can. Then I'll probably settle down. Then I'll probably see my costs go up as I have people come and help me. So maybe that's the assumption. But I think most people need to really reflect on, well, what are my working assumptions that I've got? I don't even know I have them, but what am I thinking? And how often am I going to reassess this? Because I suspect you're going to see people live longer and more expensively for longer, because we're seeing people that are in their 70s and 80s and early 90s being way more active than they thought they would be. And they're traveling, they're enjoying, they're spending, they're having hobbies. Some of them are back to work because they want money, but they also want the things that go with work, which is social engagement, sense of purpose. All these things also become important. The other factor that we haven't talked about, but people have to be mindful of, is how old are your parents? Because you may be 80, but mom and dad may still be around when you're 80. That becomes a surprise. You weren't thinking that. You're thinking about yourself. What am I going to do when I'm 90? What are you going to do when you're 90 and you're still looking after mom?
Yeah.
How about that?
In 2024, we are in a period in which home prices are ridiculous. Lots of seniors who have owned their homes for decades are sitting on a whole pile of equity. How do you build that real estate asset into the financial plan based on your hypothesis that people are going to live longer and maybe that last chapter will be pricier than they thought?
Yeah. So when we do a plan with somebody, you have to look at not just what their investment assets are, their RIFs, RSPs, but what other sources of capital can they access and what techniques can they use to access them? So it's not uncommon where people want to stay in their home for as long as possible. Okay. So how do we sell your living room if we need money? Because I can't really do that. So how do we manifest that idea? And years ago, I've had this challenge with clients, and we used, this is before even things like reverse mortgages existed. So we had to get clients, and this is something where I think the banks are going to have to kind of figure out, how do I do underwriting on someone who's 83, doesn't have a job, but wants a mortgage? How am I going to do that? And it's because I have assets, I'd now like to find a way to draw from them, but I don't really want to pay you back very often. Like, how am I going to do that? So, because the banks, I would argue, their average customer is someone who's still in early family formation, buying their first home or moving up to the second one. They're not quite as advanced on how to do lending for someone who wants to stay in their home for a longer period of time, and they're 87. How do I do that? Do I need a T4 from them? What's their gross credit score? These are things that I think they're going to have to learn to modify. And you're right. It often astonishes people how much it costs to stay in your home. And most people experience that when they're trying to pay for mom and dad. And they discover that $15,000 a month doesn't buy what I thought it would buy.
Yeah.
If someone has to come in and help.
Yeah. As if you're looking for 24-hour care, it is just unimaginable. The kind of
A couple hours a week costs a lot.
Yeah.
And actually on that topic, we also encourage clients when we do our plan with them, we have this approach we take as a part of it. We talk up, down, and sideways. So we want to look not just at your plan, but let's look up a generation. So if you're a baby boomer, maybe you will have to be responsible for helping to pay for mom and dad. And then let's look at where your kids are, because we're seeing, you mentioned housing prices. A lot of kids are still in their basements of their parents and they're 33 years old. So that's a reality. And then look sideways. Who else in my family, my brother, sister, cousin, who may be able to help me pay for mom and dad, but who also may need my help? And in the pandemic, we saw lots of people that through no fault of their own, their business closed, or like, what do I do? And they had to rely on their peers in their family to maybe support them. So I think people, when they do their planning, have to look beyond just themselves and look wider and above, down, and side. Who else might I have to help, or who else may be able to help me?
That's an interesting framework. Let me ask a supplementary question on that. How do you make priority calls? Because most people do not have anywhere near an infinite amount of resources.
Sure.
How do you make the call on can I afford to support mom in assisted care at the expense of my own retirement or the support I'm able to give to my kids?
So it's interesting you ask that, because this is a conversation that many people are finding themselves in, and it's a surprise. And I think one of the best things we as advisors can do is help people get ahead of that, because surprises generally aren't good for most people. I know, hey, Santa's great, but apart from that, surprises aren't that much fun. And you're exactly right. This does become a decision-making process. I mean, it is about prioritizing multiple competing financial objectives. And there's no right answer. And I think the best people can do is go into that being prepared, understanding it's probably going to come. What are the other resources I can access? Who's involved in the conversation? And they may need a professional guide to help them navigate it. Otherwise, it just becomes people arguing with each other.
Interesting. Well, we'll see at the pickleball court in 2074. How's that?
I need to learn how to play that. I've heard a lot about this.
I got pickleball tonight. I'm not even ahead of the curve, but I am on that train, and I'll be playing till I'm 94, which is when I'm going to say
97. I'm going to wish you all the best luck.
All right, you beat 97. Darren, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Darren Coleman, he is a senior portfolio manager at Coleman Wealth at Raymond James. He also hosts a podcast called Two Way Traffic, and he was joining us today to talk about longevity and the thought that maybe people are going to live to be 150 years old. I cannot imagine.